Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today, I'm joined by co-founder and creative director of Neom Organics, Nicola Elliott. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, Nicola, the last time you were on the podcast was October 2022. And it was a brilliant conversation where we talked about working smarter, figuring out what to prioritize and the realities of entrepreneurship. And I am really glad that you're back joining us again today to talk about your brand new book, The Four Ways to Wellbeing.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I can't believe you've asked me back a second time. That's good. That's good, isn't it? And that seems like it was only 6 months ago. Of course, time flies so fast. But yet the book is now out, has just launched. And I'm just about to start today, actually, the book tour. And it's lovely how well everyone's receiving it, because I think for so long we've spoken about wellbeing as a brand, and we've managed to grow this huge platform. And, you know, the likes of amazing people like you who've been able to give me advice over the 20-year career I've had, it felt like kind of the responsible thing, I suppose, to do, to put all of that advice in one place. Because, as I always say, wellbeing is a toolkit, and I can help you a little bit, as can you, as can the next person. But the fact is, you need myriad of voices giving advice across all levels of wellbeing to really sort of feel your best. So it is just that, is a kind of melting pot of all the best advice from the best people. So I hope you like it.
Yeah, it really is. There's so much in there. Yeah, no, it's brilliant. There's so much packed into it. And actually, I think that's really was, I suppose you kind of answered a little bit, but that was kind of my first question, was to think on in that conversation we talked about, you know, the prioritization, and obviously there's always so many things as a business founder, and I'm sure you've had requests to do lots of different things. So when it comes to decision making, that was going to be my first question, really, was what was it that made you decide now was the right time to share this book?
So I think there's a few things. If I'm really honest, I think I did feel a sense of responsibility. I think if you're talking and you're in the wellbeing sector, as you are as well, you recognise that you have got a part to play and you can help people in a way, but you also recognise that they're coming to you for help with, you know, in my case, poor sleep, stress, energy, mood, or whatever, that you have a responsibility to say, you know, can my bath oil or recipe or whatever help you? Yes, of course it can. But actually, do you know what? You also might want to try this piece of advice or read this book or listen to this person, because it's just not a one size fits all. And it's not about one element. You know, it's about doing lots of different things across lots of different elements of your life. So I felt we'd grown this huge platform, you know, the number one wellbeing brand now in the UK. And we had all these people coming to us, and our, you know, all our social is very much a place where people will trade sort of hints and tips and ideas about wellbeing in general. And in the stores, we'd kind of got to a point where we were saying to everyone who worked there, if people come in and you manage to prescribe them kind of a wellbeing routine or a three-step sleep program or whatever, make sure you also give them this advice on this great new book that's come out, or tell them about this new supplement. So became this kind of this place where we wanted to signpost people to various other places and spaces where they could learn about wellbeing. And so, yeah, I did sort of feel the responsibility of that. And also, I think I've been really lucky to, because of that platform, speak to the best people. And so as an ex-journalist, it felt like this is something that people are interested in, and combining all this knowledge together. So I think, and also I had a little bit more time now, Adrian. The reality is, you know, Neom's nearly 20 years old and I've got a fantastic team around me. And 2, 3, 4 years ago, when I always sort of thought it would be lovely to write a wellbeing book, I just didn't have the time. I didn't have the time to go to the toilet, let alone write a book.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, when you get people in the business that are better than you, and they're able to do the day job, you know, really help out and take over from so many different elements, then it did leave me with a bit more time to sort of, I suppose,
Well, as I said, there's so much in there. And one thing that stood out right at the start of the book, and obviously I know you, I know your energy and your approach, but I really loved right at the start of the book, in the introduction, you actually say, well-being isn't about being super virtuous and not having fun. And I really love this because I do think that the well-being industry and the message, it can become so serious and so structured and so heavy. And sometimes me and my husband will just say, it's boring. Like, it's actually boring. So why, I guess, did you include that? Can you talk a bit more about why fun is so important when we have this conversation about well-being?
Definitely. Well, I just don't think you're going to do for a sustained period of time anything if you don't like it. I mean, I suppose there's always the odd person who's prepared to, you know, sacrifice everything or is super kind of motivated to get up and actually, I was going to say, do a run at 5 a.m, but that's you. that's definitely not me. But I think for a lot of us, you know, it's got to be about, and that's your version of fun, so I'm joking, but it has to be something that you want to enjoy. I mean, why do we like wearing sportswear? Because it looks nice and it feels nice, you know. Why do we like going to a lovely gym with a lovely cafe at the end? You know, why do we like having a smoothie that tastes nice rather than one that, I mean, it's just human nature, right? If you make this more pleasant for yourself, whatever that looks like for you, then you're more likely to stick to it. And I think part of that is how nice that is for you. I think part of that is how well and easily it fits into your lifestyle. So I think only sort of perpetuating this version of well-being that's so virtuous and for some people so hard to follow ends up being, you know, counterproductive for a lot of us. Not all of us, but a lot of us. And I sort of felt well-being was being very served by people in that very small bucket. And actually, you know, that's lovely. I love to look at those people sometimes and think, oh, maybe one day I'll be somebody who gets up at 5 a.m. and, you know, does yoga. But that, look, I'm not going to. I really, really love drinking white wine on a weekend. And I like nothing more than a lie-in. And, you know, I'm not a marathon runner, and that is fine. And so I think it's not saying one thing's right, one thing's wrong, one thing's good, one thing's better. It's just different versions of it. And we haven't got enough examples of people who are looking after themselves and can impart tips and advice that is just maybe a bit more for people, i.e. me, in the middle, for want of a better.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the words virtuous and fun, I think the reason it stood out to me is, even though you're joking and saying, yeah, you know, I might get up early and I might go for a run and, yeah, I might find that enjoyable. However, I think what I'm also thinking about is, it doesn't have to define your entire identity. And this virtuous piece of, right, okay, if you're doing this, then you're only doing this. And if you're eating or this or sleeping like this or wearing this, or it's that piece for me. And so, for example, yes, me and my husband, we joke about the fact that we call it run, wine and dine, because we go on holiday or we'll travel somewhere and we'll run a half marathon. We'll run a half marathon. But the night before, you know, we have a glass of wine. He's buying shots for people at the bar. So I think it's that idea that actually...
You're just nutters, aren't you? I mean, that's, you're in your own box,
but that's
beyond.
Fun for us. That's what I mean. It's like, you're the person doing the run in the morning, so you won't be having a glass of wine. When actually, I think it's that idea that whatever you enjoy and have fun, it doesn't have to be this virtuous, it takes your entire identity. Oh, you're a well-being person now, so you've just got to, I don't know, give up everything fun and, like you say, kind of stick to these rules.
It's just always helpful to have different versions of what something looks like for people, isn't it? You know, that's just the truth. What, you know, different versions of how people should look, different versions of what, you know, a career might look like, a lifestyle might look like. It's just all sort of helpful in the mix. And I think at NEOM, we absolutely will serve those kind of well-being warriors, but we also serve a lot of people. We sell as many products to women who are 25 as those who are 65, which is really fascinating. You know, there's not many brands like that that sort of really encapsulate sort of from one end of the spectrum to the other. But a lot of them are what I kind of see as on that first or those early stages of their well-being journey. They're not, you know, they're not absolute well-being warriors, but they're sort of just starting to realize that, you know, if they look after themselves a bit better, then they feel a bit better. It's not about sort of living another 10 years. It's about sort of squeezing the max out of life. Mm. And so that's kind of a big amount of people who come to our brand and are sort of starting out on that journey. And so it's very much, I think, for that group of people who I think are a little bit more underserved at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we've got lots to talk about because obviously the four areas that you dive into in the book, we've got sleep, we've got stress, we've got energy, and we've got mood. Now, I'm conscious of time. So what I've done is I've kind of just picked one question from each category to talk about with you today. So I think the first one, let's talk about sleep. You know, with the work that I do, that I deliver, yeah. Wellbeing workshops and talks, often in the corporate environment. And I've done one recently, which is all about wellbeing for the modern world. And at the end of that talk, I would say at least 50% of the questions, when I open up for Q&A, at least 50% of those questions are about sleep. Sleep is something that so many people struggle with. It seems to be getting worse, I think. I think more and more people are telling me I can't fall asleep, or I wake up in the night, or I just don't have enough time in bed. I don't have enough sleep. I think a lot of people really struggle with this. So there's so much really, really great information and advice. And as you say, you've jam-packed so much into the book, mm-hmm. and the sleep chat. It's brilliant. There's so much in there. But if someone came to you and said, okay, I have poor sleep, I've tried a lot of these things, you know, I've tried and tested this, I've tried and tested that, nothing really seems to be working for me. What would you suggest mm-hmm. that person is potentially mm-hmm. missing? What's the overlooked thing that you think could help?
I think most people don't realise that sleep is only going to work if you respect your circadian rhythm, i.e. your body clock. They all think it comes down to one thing. It's like everything. Everyone always wants to tell me one thing or five things or a list or a silver bullet, a shortcut. It's not going to work like that. It'd be lovely if it did. You have to sort of come a step above it and realise that sleep works. And your body's going to tell you to go to sleep when it knows it's nighttime. It knows it's nighttime when you have respected your body clock during the day. That starts with respecting it in the morning, i.e. telling it it's morning. And you think, well, how have we got out of kilter with that? Well, we've got out of kilter with that because of modern life, because we don't go outside. The vast majority of us are spending the vast majority of our day inside, as opposed to, you know, even just 20, 30 years ago. I think it was vastly different. So we're spending time inside in the morning, not getting out and seeing natural light, and then we're on our phones at the end of the day. So we are messing, and that's just two, but in many different ways, with our body clock. So if we can set it right in the morning, get outside, see the light for about half an hour when we wake up, within an hour of waking up, and then and I'm not going to go into the whole day, but if we then, as the day goes on, respect all the parts of that circadian rhythm, ending with the end of the day, not getting ourselves all revved up and showing ourselves false light, but creating a much kind of more mellow environment with the sleep routine, then ultimately you're going to be teaching your body when is morning and when is evening. So I think it's understanding what that circadian rhythm means, the importance of it, and then the rules underneath it. People just want to go straight to one of the rules. Well, there's about
yeah.
a dozen.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's absolutely brilliant advice. And I completely agree that if you're focusing just on, okay, what you do before you get into bed, what do you do in bed? Like you said, those things are important, of course, you know, having the right sleep environment, the right temperature, you know, mm-hmm. not having caffeine late, you know, you discuss all this in the book. But I completely agree that people, if they consider, okay, when you wake up in the morning, that first hour, you know, obviously with the power hour, but also going outside, daylight in your eyes, all those things that you discussed, I think it exactly. it's longer, isn't it, than just absolutely. The okay, it's 9 p.m. now I need to think about how am I going to switch off my brain and sleep.
Totally. Yeah. It's a bit like me saying, how am I going to get a body like yours, Adrienne? Well, if I do 20 squats a day. Well, you know, 20 squats, I'm sure, is something you might do, but you're also going to do 10 other things. So it's like thinking, well, respect the movement and the body and all the different elements of it. And then within that, you might have running and squatting and la, la, la. People always want to just go to, well, you know, just the 10 squats. So circadian rhythm, you have material opportunity to change your ability to sleep. People are not born either a good or a bad sleeper. You have that power. It's just learning about it. We do a great thing called the 11 golden rules to sleep. It's actually in the book, and they've just changed my life.
No, did you ever have trouble sleeping? Have you been a good sleeper yourself? Have you had different periods of time where you've struggled to sleep?
Yeah, I'm 45 now, and I was always quite a good sleeper. I was kind of one of those people that even on an hour and a half flight would sleep. Definitely gets harder as you get older. I think maybe, you know, when you've had children and you were up during the night with them and stresses of life and everything, it's definitely not as easy as it was then. I sort of pretty hit a stage where I wasn't that great. And then deep dived into, we did some great work with Nick Whitten a couple of years ago, and I really threw myself into those golden rules of sleep and understanding it. And now it works for me. But if I don't do them, I am at the mercy, like everyone else, of, you know, sleeping 4 or 5 hours. And then I absolutely feel like, you know, dirt the next day. I honestly really, really can't recover. That's the thing I realise if I don't sleep now. The anxiety that I get the next day, the mood, the lack of energy. Beforehand, if I didn't have a good night's sleep, the implication wouldn't have been as bad. Now it's like dire. Oh,
well, it's, I think it's important for sometimes for people to hear that there can be phases and stages of sleep, especially if you're in a stage where your sleep isn't great, because sometimes people just surrender to that. Well, I'm just not a good sleeper. So I think it's also nice for people to hear that actually, totally, when you implement some of these things, it can improve and you can kind of turn it around. So we talked about some of the modern challenges. Absolutely. There, modern world stresses, like you said, scheduling, blue light on our phones, stress, of course, is the next big word. And again, after sleep, that's typically the thing that people are, oh well, focus and concentration comes up a lot, but stress, I know, is definitely in the top three. So it's a big issue for a lot of people. Do you think that, I guess before we dive into some of the tactics, do you think that stress is being taken a little bit more seriously now, being appreciated more, kind of the effects of stress? Because I think, I don't know, even if I think back to like 10, 15 years ago, the kind of conversation, even the cliche thing that we have in the UK, keep calm and carry on. You know, there's a lot of talk about resilience and actually, you know, resilience, we've got to be resilient. Resilience is good. We're encouraged to be resilient. And I think there's that fine line, isn't there, between how does stress management and resiliency coexist? So do you think that narrative is shifting and people actually are starting to understand how impactful stress is on our health, or do you think we're still trying to soldier on?
I think it's hugely changed. You know, when I started NEOM 20 years ago, started because I started having panic attacks. There wasn't a name. It wasn't called a panic attack. It was like you've had a bit of an episode, and there was no anxiety. It was something that you felt anxious before you went on, I don't know, stage, before you did a play. It just wasn't spoken about in that way. So I know that it's changed massively, and look, that's a great thing. It's a really, really good thing. But we still have to balance with resilience in answer to the second part of your question, because we still need to have a life. You know, we still are having children and having careers, and we still want to get the most out of life. So I suppose, and the balance is exactly that. It's a balance. It one day goes one way and it next day goes the next day way. So it's something that we just have to try and kind of constantly work on and evolve. And I suppose sharing hints and tips and tricks, etc., with each other, much like the book, much like your podcast, is something that helps it, because also what works for me and what works for you is going to be different. So it's a case of trial and error. But yeah, I think it is great that people are talking about it more. And I certainly had no idea how to look after myself in the way, you know, that I do now 20 years ago. And partly that's because I'm 20 years older. But I think a lot of that is because now we speak about all of these different ways of helping ourselves.
Yeah. And what would you say, I guess, as we've kind of discussed, there's lots of different options and everybody's different and everyone's situation would be different. But how do you think someone could start to, I suppose, understand the impact that stress is potentially having on their life and on their health? If they're thinking, oh yeah, you know, that's just life. It's just part of the job. It's just part of life. And as you say, as you get older, different commitments, kids, you know, you talk about in the book, overcommitment. How can people, I guess, start to see what are the flags in their life that would say, hang on a minute, this isn't sustainable. The stress is actually impacting your health.
Well, I think to start with, we're new to defining stress in a myriad of different ways. Whilst I say we've moved from where, you know, we were 20 years ago, in my experience, we have. But I still think we see stress as something that is a much more mental problem. Whereas now we're starting to see that actually that can show up in a more physical kind of capacity. My boyfriend, for example, will never be, you know, stressed in the way that you and I probably would define it, in a sort of, you know, overwhelm sort of state of mind. But if he gets stressed, if he knocks his elbow or his knee, it flares up. It's a physical thing. Mm. So I think, you know, inflammation, and all the other different ways that stress shows up is only just being it's starting to be something that we speak about. So I think that's the first thing. Don't assume that if there's something else that's going on, that might not also be linked to stress. That's the first thing. The other thing is I would always encourage people to think of protecting themselves before it gets to a problematic stage. You know, again, my story was that I started with awful panic attacks. And I think, you know, looking back, there were definitely things that with hindsight I could have done to protect myself in advance of that sort of biting me on the arse. And I think that is something for us to talk about and, you know, impart that knowledge on our children very much as well. So those small kind of ways in which we can build stress relief into our day, which again shouldn't be an extra thing to do, it should just be part of life and it should be something that you actually enjoy, it's a nice thing to do, are hugely important, as opposed to at the point of when it becomes unbearable then trying to row back from that.
Because we all
so there's a lot in the book about how you can engineer these micro moments of sort of down reversing stress and making sure you build that relaxation and then actually linking to sleep, because of all the pillars also link. If you can't teach your body during the day to relax in small moments, then the fact is you're not going to be able to teach it to relax when it needs to relax, whether that's sleeping at the end of the day or whether that's when you become very stressed. So learning how to do that in those smaller, sort of more palatable times, I would say, is really important.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially as January for me, you know, we just discussed before we started recording, I was like, I've been unwell, you know, I'm trying to recover from illness, which is physical illness. You know, if you get an infection or you get a virus, this is what it is. But I think we're all guilty sometimes of actually, you know, trying to continue and trying to do all the things. And actually when you know, if you've got kids, like, you know, I've got commitments, I've got work. And I think two things in that were in my mind when you were talking then around stress management and around that overwhelm feeling is, firstly, communicating honestly with people and saying, you know, whether it is stress, whether it's physical illness, it's treating them in the same way. Because as soon as I said to somebody, if I said to you, oh, I can't, you know, do this podcast today because I've been unwell and I've had a chest infection, you might say, okay, that's totally reasonable. But I think sometimes people don't think they can be completely honest when they say, actually, I'm, you know, if their mental health is struggling, if they're feeling anxious, if they're feeling overwhelmed, if they're feeling burnt out and stressed, it's almost like, oh, that's not a good enough reason. And I think actually more people probably need to be honest and say, I've had a lot, you know, of whatever stress in my life and it's really debilitating me. I need some time to rest. I need some time to recover. And I think most people would probably be like, yeah, okay with that and go, wow, you know, take the time that you need and not feeling guilty or not feeling shamed or not feeling like, I don't know, that we're lazy or that we're, you know, making an excuse. I think hopefully that narrative is people are understanding stress is real.
I mean, I totally agree. But I also think if you're not comfortable, and it would be lovely if you were, but if you're not at the stage where you're comfortable saying that or giving that kind of information, at least get to the stage where you protect yourself. You know, even if you said, I'm just not feeling great today, you don't have to give someone that much data if you're uncomfortable with it, which is fine. I'm not saying you shouldn't, and I'm not saying we shouldn't try and take the shame away from that. We absolutely should. But even more important than that is actually you protecting yourself. So I think don't feel it's either go ahead or it's, you know, explain yourself in a way you're uncomfortable with to somebody else. There's a midway point there where you've absolutely got the right to say you're not feeling up to it, you're not feeling well enough, you're just, you know, you're really struggling at the moment. So I think that's a point. Absolutely. As well.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So the next thing, which kind of links to all of it, I mean, as you say, they're all interlinked, is energy. Now, I'm someone who talks a lot about energy as well. And I think aside from sleep, because we've discussed that, which is so important for improving our overall energy, there are, of course, other things to consider in this kind of energy equation. So there's different kinds of energy. There's different things that we need to restore, whether it's our physical energy, our mental energy, our emotional. And I think you also added spiritual energy as well, which I love. So, yeah, could you talk through that for us? And maybe if people are thinking, OK, yeah, actually this time of the year, I'm feeling a little bit low energy, feeling a little bit low mood. I think typically they just think about maybe nutrition or the physical body, which is like, okay, I'm feeling low energy. I need to do something, you know, that's physical. But where do those other things come in, the emotional and the spiritual as well?
Sure. Well, I think it is interesting that typically we've always thought if you're low in energy or it's about laying down and recuperating, and it might be that. But a lot of people actually, you know, garner their energy from filling their cup with other activities. That might be something creative. It might be going out with friends. It might be a hobby. But I think thinking a little bit outside of that box and not just assuming that, again, it's a one size fits all. It's about what fills you up. And look, people are a bit scared by this. I know, again, coming back to what you said before, they really want the five things. They want to know, look, eat eggs, lay down for an hour and a half, put your legs on a wall and, you know, wear a blue jumper. It's just not, unfortunately, it's just not as prescriptive as that. But I think it is helpful to say it's not always about doing nothing. You know, doing something can quite often bring you that energy. So the first thing would be sort of to debunk that myth and make sure that you understand that what works for you is very different. And I suppose this is the sort of theme of this whole book in a way, is make sure that you do you and spend a bit of time trying all those things out. I mean, I get energy by, you know, I ride my horse. It's a sort of a good, it's a good mix for me of doing something that's quite mindful without actually sitting and doing, you know, a mindfulness practice. It forces my attention onto something that is completely outside of the realm of my working day-to-day practical life. It's outside in nature. So those three things, those sort of three angles are really, they really work for me. So the next person, it might be going painting with a group of people who know nothing about your home life, but are a different group of people, and it fills that creative cup. So I think it's about, quite often, energy is about getting outside of your daily routine. And yes, if it can incorporate a couple of other elements, like something outside or something in nature or something away from sort of the day-to-day, then that's a great one. Food, you've mentioned, you know, is an obvious one, but it is an obvious one, and it does need thinking about. This is not, you're not going to energize yourself by just going on a month-long pizza binge. It might work for a night or two, but clearly, you know, you need to be thinking about what you're putting into your body, and obviously all the other elements, that the movement, etc.
No, it's nice when you said that about you know what gives you energy and what fills you up, and for everyone it's different, and it's not always. You're so right at the start, you know, that I suppose debunking that myth, which it says if you're low energy and you're low mood, it must mean that you're tired and exhausted, you need to rest, because I'm exactly the opposite in some ways. It's like, actually, I know if I wake up feeling low mood, especially at certain points in my cycle, week four in my cycle, if I wake up feeling low mood, I know that A, movement's going to help me, but B, music. For me, music shifts my state. If I want to feel more energized, we've got Sonos in every room. You know, I like to have the music loud, and I'll have like gospel music, or I might have just something that really, really just feels like color, you know, it like lifts me up. And I feel like the kids sometimes now, we have to obviously, you know, take turns on the Spotify, and the kids playlist comes on, and my son's into WWE. So sometimes I'll be listening to my like uplifting music, and then the next track that comes on is like Prodigy or something, but they, but it works even for them, you know, everyone, they love it. It really does like lift the state of the energy of the whole house. Yeah. So yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. I think thinking about it, of like, like which things can lift my energy and which things can shift my state into a different feeling, as opposed to just I'm feeling low energy, therefore I must rest.
And I hope that people sort of get from this that they go, oh, that's an interesting idea. They'll try it and it may work for them and it may not work for them. And that's fine. It's not like Adrienne was right or Adrienne was wrong. No, Adrienne was right for her. You've got to find out what's right for you. And I think that's a big thing, is taking the onus back and figuring out what does this wellbeing toolkit look like, you know, loosely under the pillars of which we've described, but that works for you. You know, I can tell you what supplements I take, but they're probably not going to be right for you. I can tell you which exercise I like, but it's probably not going to, you know, move the dial for you in the same way as it does for me. So I think just go and take a year of testing everything out and just ditch things. The minute you say they don't work or I don't like them, get rid of them. Just get rid of them till you get to the end of 2024 and you've got a kit that you go, I absolutely love this. It doesn't only make me feel better and help me, but actually it's carved out this area of my life that I've got total permission for, that actually, you know, works for me. And by the way, that will evolve. Mm. So 2025, you know, you may be ditching another 20% of it, bringing another. Exactly. And I think if you can get nothing more than that into your head, then like you're on a really great path.
You see, I love this about you, Nicola. That's probably why you've been such a successful entrepreneur. This idea of test and learn, try it out. Like you said, try this, try that, figure it out, you know, try new things. It's just not the end of the world if, oh, you've picked this now, you've got to stick to that forever. You don't have to pick and stick, just try it out. And so last but not least, mood. And again, all of these things, I'm sure, you know, contribute. But again, I underlined something in the book, which I loved. It was kind of a quote in there that said, it's a bad day, not a bad life. And I kind of, even when I read it, I kind of had your voice in my mind, because I thought, actually, how brilliant. You know, I talk a lot about mindset and about attitude and, you know, but our mindset and our attitude and our decisions and our choices, having that kind of feeling of agency, which says, I get to decide, I get to choose, I get to have, you know, I can influence and impact, is so powerful. But I think we can all fall into that trap, can't we, of like a bad day means your life is a disaster. So can you talk to us about that? Why was that there? If, you know, it's a bad day, not a bad life.
Totally. Well, you know, I've only just started journaling really the last year. And I think what was really interesting was I was going through a kind of really funny year last year, loads of highs and lows at the same time. And I would write my journal and go, you know, it's one of those ones that's got a grade at the top, are you having a good day or not? And looked over like 1-2 week period, and like one day I was putting a 2, and the next day I'm putting a 10, and the next day I'm putting a 3, and the next day I'm putting a 9. And I thought, you know, the great thing with journaling, is many benefits of journaling, but probably the best thing for me is that actually it's a reminder when you look back that the bad days will go because life moves on, but also to be grateful when you've got the good days, because sure as little eggs, they're going to go as well. So I think, you know, I mean, it helps when you're obviously a bit longer in the tooth and you've been through more things, definitely, to be able to sort of stand behind that comment, because that's life, isn't it? There's highs and there's lows, whoever you are and whatever your challenges are, for sure. But I think if you get that in your head from a macro point of view, it's really, really helpful. But I think we speak an awful lot in the book where mood's concerned about positive psychology. And I'm a massive fan of, I don't know if you know Vanessa King, she runs Action for Happiness. It's a brilliant, brilliant charity. I've read all her books. I'm like totally fangirl her. But they've done, her and her team have done so much work on positive psychology. And it really is fascinating how we now know, and this is new knowledge really, how we can redevelop neural pathways in our brain. So if you think you are, and I can have a propensity to, you know, have a bad week or a bad month, you know, I can absolutely flip one way or another. But if you really do understand that it is within your grasp to recreate new neural pathways and essentially choose that you're going to pick those better days or that better way of looking at those days as opposed to the negative days, and that feels like a power that you have, that for me, I think understanding that that is within our grasp has been such a game changer. So we talk a little bit about positive psychology in the book, and enough to give you a taster for sure. Yeah. But there's so much, you know, information out there about that, and I think understanding what that is and how it works has been huge in my life. And also, yeah, that you're not meant to be happy all the time. That was a bit of a game changer for me as well. I don't like that very much, because I don't like the day so I'm not feeling happy, but I do accept it. And so I think understanding that within the context of mood is pretty powerful too.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's been very impactful in my life as well, actually, doing that work around, you know, I suppose redesigning, you know, you talked about neuroplasticity and the pathways and redesigning them and how powerful, you know, positive psychology really is. You know, it's so powerful. And I think the more you experience it for yourself, the more you kind of go, aha, there's something in this. And it takes time, doesn't it? Sometimes, as you said, it's not that every single day consecutively means, okay, everything's going to be positive. There's still ups and downs, there's still ebbs and flows. But I think overall, the way you start to react to things when they aren't going right, the way you respond, this kind of, I call it sometimes essential optimism, or, you know, it's this feeling that underneath you have an optimistic mindset that overall things will or can improve. And just having that, if nothing else, you're not saying, oh, you know,
Well, they'll change.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to change, you know? So I think that's the learning is, you know, if it's not good, don't worry, it's going to pass. It's like that, this too shall pass, right? If it's not good, it's going to change. But also if it is good, you know, sort of hang on to it and appreciate that moment, because that's also going to change. But we, for a long time, had a sort of mantra at Neom. It's sort of written on, you know, on the walls of stores and bags and gifts and everything. Small steps, big difference. Mm. And when I'm having a bit of a rough time, I break it right down to tiny things. You know, honestly, that really is the time where light a candle, make a nice meal, ring a friend, just stop thinking about the big stuff, because that will make it worse for me. Let's just go right down to the small stuff. You know, let's tonight just go out for a nice meal, or order a takeaway, or see how mine usually involve food. Or in your, you know, your case, you know, maybe go on a different run or whatever. But I think those little things actually can be very, very powerful.
Yeah.
So there are times where I don't think big, I think small.
Small things, big difference. I think I need to think about that more often. I'll be honest, if my husband was listening to this conversation, which I don't know, maybe he listens to the podcast sometimes, he would say, you see, Adrienne, because I sometimes can get stuck in that like problem solver, big picture thinking. Like my brain typically tends to go, yeah, okay, option A, B, C, D, E. I'm constantly like strategizing and thinking and trying to problem solve. And actually, I think sometimes you're right, when just doing that and almost like ruminating on something, just taking a break from it and leaving it alone, like you said, you know what, just go for dinner, just forget about it, actually do something small, put it down. And the small things, big difference. I really think, even just in terms of the problem solving itself, don't have to solve the whole problem. I don't know, that really spoke to me then. I was like, I need a bit of that in my life right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, again, not bringing it back to a silver bullet, but I think that for me was always the, when we started the brand, the idea of the candles and the working as a treatment was actually, you know, on those nights when it's like a rainy Tuesday and it's all a bit miserable, I hate Tuesdays, I've got a real problem with Tuesdays in general. And when it's like a rainy Tuesday in like February, and, you know, just two rubbish things have come in and you've got a rubbish thing to do tomorrow. And you know the feeling. Yeah. It was like, how can you create that kind of zone between 7 and 8 just to be like a real sanctuary and, you know, a sort of time where you can replenish yourself in a very short space of time with very little? And so I always sort of think to those moments, because I think if you can, and look, it might be getting fish and chips or ringing a friend or whatever it may be, but I honestly think if you can take those little moments, yep, and just flip them ever so slightly, then you're quite often on a much better path.
Yeah, no, I agree. And actually, I'm not just saying this because it's you, Nicola, and because it's Neom, but you know, I think I told you this before, my favourite candle of all the candles I've ever had, all the brands ever in my life, my favourite one is the Neom Happy scent. And I have the 3-wick one.
Oh.
Yeah, I have the 3-wick one. And I got it, yeah. It ran out and I got it again for Christmas from the kids. And that is one of my, like you said, the small moments, that's one of mine. When I put it on, it's the 3-wick one. So it literally makes the whole downstairs smell amazing. And it's one of those, when you were describing that Tuesday rainy night, then I was thinking that is literally when I go, I'm going to get my 3-wick Neom Happy candle, because I love it so much. So thank you for that.
It suits you. If you were a Neom scent, Adrienne, you would be the Neom happiness.
Yeah. I love it.
Definitely.
All right, well, that is the perfect segue to another small moment, which is, of course, the power hour. First hour of the day. Nicola, I'm not sure exactly, my memory is not that good to tell you exactly what you said in October 2022. But at the moment, the book's out. I'm sure you're doing lots of exciting things. What does the first hour typically look like? Is there anything you're trying to avoid in the morning? Is there anything you're adding in the morning to kind of start your day feeling the way you want to feel?
So I like a cup of tea in bed in the morning. I like to start gently. So I like sleeping. I am not a jump out of bed 5 a.m. person. I wish I was, but I'm not. So I have a cup of tea, either brought to me by my boyfriend or I make one myself. And if he's not there, and I go back to bed for like 15 minutes and just kind of bring myself around gently. And I always find that that works quite well for me. And then I wake my daughter, take her to school. I do like doing the gym in the morning. I find if I don't go for that early morning class, the likelihood of me going later in the day is very limited. And it does make a huge difference to my mental, to my frame of mind, like unbelievable. And I do a kind of, I don't know how you describe my gym. It's sort of like, it is kind of weights, which I do think are really important now. Now I'm kind of getting older, and a bit of cardio in there, and it's all like a kind of circuit thing. So I do that, and I like that. And then a few days a week, I do fasting until one, and we'll have a couple of bulletproof coffees. I probably didn't say that a year ago because I've only been doing that for the last 6 months, but I think that's pretty good. And then I just get straight on with meetings. I think better in the morning, so I'm like my actions are faster in the morning, and then in the afternoon I might do like some writing, or it generally will relax a bit more in the afternoon. So morning will be, I'm sorry, I've given you the first 3 hours there, haven't I?
No, that's all right. No, it's great. And yeah, and you can see, as you said throughout this whole episode, that because you've trialed different things and because you're open to change, like you said, oh, I didn't do this before and now I do. You're not saying this is what I do forever. You're saying, oh, I'm doing this right now. And I think that piece, you know, is kind of the common thread, isn't it? Is trying things out, testing things and learning, being open-minded and going, oh, I'm trying this for now. It's making me feel good, so I'm going to keep doing it. Exactly. Actually, that's not making me feel so great. I'm going to change it. So that's definitely what I'm going to take away from this conversation today.
Good. Try all the nice things, Adrian.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've really loved having you back on the podcast again. Congratulations on the book. It is out now, everyone, Four Pillars to Wellbeing. Thank you, Nicola. And thank you, as always, everyone, for tuning in. I will be back next week with another episode. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.